Yo, check it out. A whole new generation of young people today who belong nowhere.
But I prefer to be now cast.
Third culture kids, where the content of the Dukan is the corner shop or the top shop.
We are live outside. Hey, yo, what's up, people?
What up, nation?
It's a revolution of expression.
You tuned in to the Dukan show. Stay tuned in.
Arab digital generation is shaping our identity, their creative expression, and their future. So please give a very warm welcome.
Welcome to your tribe.
Alrighty. Akawi, you want to do the honors?
شيل أن أنت الماي تبعك.
Why?
حط على اليسار. عشان ما شاء الله it takes over.
Bro, I feel like it's part of the brand now. You can't, like, you're taking away a part of me.
It's just on the ground. Relax.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We're back with another episode of The Dukan Show. I'm OT, Auntie Reem.
Hello.
And today we have a special guest, Tony.
Hello.
And as usual, Akawi معكم. Tony, how's it going?
It's going great.
Welcome to The Dukan Show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, first questions first. Is Tony, like, I'm just gonna say it like it is. You know how some Asian cultures, they have like their Asian name and then they have their Western name. Is Tony like just a Western name?
It's my name.
Or is just actually
it's
just
his government name.
Okay. Is it short for anything?
Nope.
Uh-huh. Not Anthony.
Antoine.
Just Tony.
You went with Antoine.
Anthelius. Anthelius.
Anthelius.
Anthelius.
What is that?
It's like Greek mythology, kind of.
No, he just made it up.
Or Anthelius.
He just made it up.
No? Doesn't work?
Damn it.
No, and it turns into Anthony, not Tony. Anyways, it doesn't matter. Let's move on. Keep this train moving. So, Tony, what is happening?
Tell us why we're here.
Why are you here?
Why am I here? Because we bullied him to show
up. First of all, we bullied him for showing up, but yes.
I'm here to share a bit about my culture and where I come from.
Yeah.
Amazing.
We have an event coming up on the 29th at Lapita Hotel in Dubai Parks and Resorts.
Yes.
And it's a night where different countries in the Pacific come together and we celebrate and express our culture.
So what are countries in the Pacific? Tell us.
So there are countries such as Tonga, Fiji, Samoa, Cook Islands, New Zealand.
Mm.
There are more.
You know, on my bucket list, I always wanted to go to Samoa.
Yeah?
You want to?
I just want to go and experience.
Of course.
Yeah. But then I realized it's like 40 hours to get there and 3 visas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Visas?
Oh, I'm Lebanese. Welcome to my culture. Just hop on a plane and go to Samoa? No, bro, I wish.
It doesn't work like that. But also, on that note… we'll know what it feels like to be Reem when we go there.
What do you mean? Oh, because you think you think I operate in a world where everyone's really I mean, I just think everyone is freakishly incorrectly big.
Now I get your joke.
Yeah.
I got lost for a second.
Samoans, mashallah.
So this is what we know probably incorrectly about Pacific Islanders. Y'all are really like, you're built like houses.
Yeah.
Like you guys are built like houses. Yeah. And so you seem, with all due respect, you seem like a regular guy.
So, I mean, I grew,
but he's 6'1".
It's the Dubai one.
No. Let's explain. Like, tell me about your family. What do they look like?
Well, I grew up being pointed out as the small guy. I was considered the runt of the family.
See?
I was always
there it is.
Told that I was skinny, that I was unwell, if I needed
oh,
to
no.
eat.
Oh no, yeah. You were the Reem. Wow.
I was Reem.
The Reem.
I grew up as Reem.
Oh no.
You grew up as Reem.
I grew up as Reem.
Oh no. But he's tough and disciplined and tenacious because of it.
And it wasn't until I arrived here in the Middle East.
Right.
And when I got off the plane, everyone was like…
What? I am so tiny. Yeah. And do you like shrink when you go into places?
It literally wasn't until I got here that I realized, oh, actually, I'm not so petite.
Right.
No, as I thought I was.
Not at all, no.
So you're from Samoa?
I was born and raised in New Zealand.
Okay.
But ethnically, I'm from Samoa.
Oh.
My cultural background is Samoan.
And Samoan… Okay, so this is… And again, pardon our ignorance, because the truth of it is that there's… What I know about Pacific Islanders is you are all… Like, there's so many different islands and each island has its own identity, culture, heritage, music. Mm-hmm. So, tell me about Samoa. Like, what are the pillars of Samoan culture?
Wait, is it Samoa or Samoa? Just so we say this correctly.
Sorry, I didn't hear the difference.
She said Samoa. Samoa. I said Samoa.
I was always told it was Samoa, but I don't.
I think it was Samoa.
Samoa.
Huh?
No, Samoa.
Samoa.
Samoa. Okay.
Yeah, thank
Samoa.
You.
Samoa.
Samoa.
To answer that question, I'd have to put out a disclaimer.
Yeah.
Okay.
That when I speak, I would speak from my experience.
Of course.
Yeah. Because I was born in New Zealand and I was raised in New Zealand. So I couldn't speak on behalf of those who grew up, who were born and raised in Samoa. But at the essence of our culture, our identity is family.
Okay.
Mm. That's one of the biggest pillars in our culture, in our cultural identity, is that everything revolves around the ainga, or that's our word for family.
Say the word again, sorry.
Ainga.
Ainga.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that means family.
That means family.
And you guys, when you say family, just for context, it's not like your nuclear family of parents, siblings. It's like the third, fourth, fifth cousins, nephews, yep. and nieces, like yep. the whole squad.
Yes. Yes. So I grew up with all my cousins. I didn't know the dynamics of an actual nuclear family. I grew up with my grandparents, my aunties, my uncles. Mum's one of 11, dad's one of 14.
Mm-hmm.
So we grew up in this structure of not actually knowing. We were aware of the titles that we use as mum, dad, auntie, uncle.
Right.
But the dynamics of a nuclear family was
everybody. So everybody was in your business.
Everybody was in your business.
Yeah,
everybody
yeah.
knew each other's gossip.
Uh-huh.
All 27.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I've always said to my family, I had this conversation on Sunday, just gone with my sister, and I said to her, we could put the Kardashians out of business.
I could imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I could imagine.
With the drama that we've come up with. Like, I'm like, yo.
So what are your WhatsApp loops? Like? What do they exactly. look like?
It's crazy.
It's a mess. Yeah. It's a mess.
There's like 60 people, and it's just like the immediate family.
Dumpster fire. Dumpster fire WhatsApp groups.
I think it was about maybe a year, 2 years ago. Out of nowhere, one of my cousins, she put up a picture of herself in hospital with a newborn. And we're like,
wait
what?
A minute.
Yeah. She's like, guys, I've just had a baby. We're like, you didn't even know you're pregnant.
So wait, question. Speaking, since you mentioned the Kardashian and the whole showbiz thing, is Dwayne Johnson the right, correct representation of the Pacific Islands? Because he's like in the front of all
right.
that. Like, mm-hmm. what do people think of him in Samoa or in the islands or like, are they proud? Is he the correct representation of everything? Because when I think Samoa, like how I fell in love with Samoa was one, him, and then like watching Fast 7 when they all went back to Samoa and seeing that kind mm-hmm. of culture. And then from that, I started researching more about that. Mm-hmm. So is that like, are people like, what's their take on Dwayne Johnson?
I think there's a mix.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, my personal opinion is that I think he does a great job in bringing awareness of our region of the world, because before him, not very many people knew much about the Pacific.
Yeah.
And so for me, I enjoy that he brings the element to the world and he showcases the essence of where he comes from. But I have heard of people who don't agree with the way that he represents our culture.
Okay.
Mm. But for me, I personally, I love it. I love it. There was I can't remember which movie it was. And at the end of the movie, he came out dancing. And he did a Samoan dance. I can't remember what movie it was.
Was it Fast 7? Because I don't really saw him, like when he went back.
But did you see him dancing?
Homeland.
I don't remember.
I don't remember it.
I don't remember.
It was not this one. Not the one. It was two movies ago. Two movies ago?
Yes. I watched the movie where he went back to Samoa.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
But I don't think he did. It's a different movie.
That was the Fast and Furious one. But again, there's like hundreds at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know which is which.
So actually a question. What is... You said he did a dance. He did a dance. What is the dance, and why is it significant? Like,
so for he didn't actually do an actual dance, but the fact that he incorporated it into the movie,
right?
For me, was like that's a gesture that I appreciate because you're kind of putting it on using your platform to show the world this is where we're from.
Yeah. Mm.
But you know, this dance was even before the way, I think even in rugby, like the first time I went to a rugby sevens.
Right.
And was it the Samoans or who was it? And they went down, one of the smaller teams. They did the haka and I was like, whoa.
When you see it, so like, I think our first a lot of people's first interaction with, you know, with the region is going to be the haka.
Yeah.
And so can you explain like, what is the haka to you?
Mm-hmm.
And why is it so, like, what makes it so powerful? Because it moves me. Like, when I see it, I move deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us about the history of it.
I think that the best way to answer that question is to understand how we use dance in our culture. Mm. Dance for us is a language.
Yeah.
And we use the movements of our bodies to tell a story. That's how we passed our knowledge on to the next generations. We didn't sit down and write exams and have a teacher at the front of the classroom, you know, explaining life that way. We learned by coming together as a community and expressing and passing on knowledge by movement.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so with haka, traditionally what the haka is, it's actually a war dance.
Okay.
A war dance?
It's a war dance. Mm. So back in the day, the different tribes would go to war for whatever reason. And before they actually
engaged
in combat, it was a ritual to try and see who could out-intimidate the other.
Mm.
It was this mental war that happened before the physical war.
Before you actually get into it.
Before you actually got into it.
Because once you get into someone's head, that's half the battle, right?
Yeah. And so, I mean, like that traditionally, when our tribes would go to war against each other, they would use that dance as telling the story first and foremost of when I stand here, this is who is behind me.
Right.
Mm.
So these are my grandparents, my great-grandparents, and the way that, I mean, obviously you couldn't stand there and sing or chant every name. So what we do is we chant the land that we belong to because it's our connection to the land that represents it. So we'll chant things like, this is our mountain, this is our river.
Wow.
This is our place in the world. This is who we are.
That's the strength that I'm bringing to this. I got all that.
Yeah.
Fucking have dubki.
And so,
cultural exchange. So dubka is the Lebanese the Levant pre-wedding war dance.
Okay. It's not as deep.
It is not.
I don't know much of it to know where the depth comes from. But it's
actually,
not as deep.
No, like so. Strangely enough, I have a degree in dance.
Used to be a dubka instructor in Ottawa.
I was not. Oh, wow. No. But no, like traditionally Arab dances, our tribe.
You have a degree in dance?
No, like a minor.
A minor in dance?
I minored in dance. Yeah. Anyways. Sure. So this was literally 13, 14 years ago. It doesn't matter. The point
Welcome
here.
No.
This is not a Reams plane. I'm explaining.
We have a Reams plane, butter when Reams plane.
So, Reams
plane is when I explain something.
She Reams planes.
In my way, but okay. No, this is not.
It usually
this is
starts
not one
with
of
let
them.
Me tell you.
Yeah. No, this is not one of them. This is okay. So. Whereas your like dances from the islands tend to be, and Filipinos have some dances as well. Our dances are groups, are in groups. In the Bedouin, in the Arab world, our dances are in a line. And like there is like deep symbolism to that. Well, how we are connected to the sand and the earth and the sky, and whereas for the islands it was an expression of ownership because we're Bedouins, so we travel. The line travels, and that you are owning this land. This land you are not going to move from. So symbolically, the dance has such deep. And when, to be honest with you, one of my favorite memories, which I'll share, one of my favorite memories of our friendship was at Kawi leading the dubka during my sister's wedding. I have that memory of like that. And I'm like, this is our culture. This is how we celebrate each other.
And we're trying to intimidate the groom's family.
So there's a war dance. And we really as well. Yeah. So like culturally, dance for us is actually more linear. And for you, it is more outward to protect. And for us, it is to travel, to find, to seek water, to seek each other. I find it interesting, you know.
I find that very interesting because just hearing that. So in the Pacific, we see ourselves as a sea of islands.
A sea of islands.
Yeah. So we see ourselves as the people of the water, the people of the ocean.
Oh. Mm.
And so you saying that you were seeking water, we come from the water.
So that's why the 29th. So on the 29th, I think that it's amazing that we get to see and celebrate your culture here in Dubai. So if you are around, please, we'll put all the details at the bottom of this
post.
But I just feel truthfully like this is going to be such a special event because it is truly your culture express. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think it's just something we... I just didn't know you guys existed in the UAE. I've got to say it.
Also, do you guys teach to other... like, or is it you have to be from the Pacific to do this, or it's like full-on cultural appropriation?
Are we just...
Great question. Yeah, like, if we decide to like show up to class.
Mm-hmm. Are there classes? I don't think there are.
I don't know. I'm guessing here.
I don't know of any classes.
Okay, but
you guys are rehearsing for the show.
Well, yeah. It's their culture.
I mean, yeah.
That's what
Gary's saying is, can I come to rehearsal and can I perform on the 29th?
I said that yesterday and Emil just looked at me. I'm like, okay, fine. All right, let me just walk away from this.
Yeah,
I'm going to teach you guys how to dubke if you ask me.
Tony explain.
So in Samoa, we have a concept called va.
Va.
Va. V-A.
V-A. Va.
Yeah, va. And what va is the space that is between me and you.
Oh.
So the vibe between you and me would be different to the vibe between me and
OT. Right.
Yeah. And it basically it's relationships.
Right.
Right. And when you engage in that vibe or that space or that relationship, depending on who you're in relationship to, would shift the dynamic of whatever protocols you'll engage in. And so when it comes to, for example, on the 29th, we are telling our story to whoever wants, who in this region who would love to come and hear our story.
Yeah.
When it comes to teaching the dance, I personally am of the mindset that whoever is open to understanding the fundamentals behind the dance and then engaging, I'm all for it.
Right.
One thing that whenever I meet someone, they're always like, can you do the haka?
Do it now, like that, on the spot.
yeah. And I'm like, so explaining what the haka is, it's actually calling or expressing my ancestors
and
the land that I come from. So I can't just like on the spot be like,
no,
here's a haka.
Yeah, there's so much passion in haka. Like, I don't know if you've ever saw that video where it was the USA versus, was it New Zealand? And before they started the game in the national anthem, the New Zealanders did a full-on haka and everyone in the U.S. And it was like Kobe and Durant
it's
when he was
done. It's intimidating.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and the basketball game.
Yeah.
I think because you don't realize.
But it's not intimidating. Sorry to interrupt you. It's because of what he said I want to do. It's because there's so much passion. Because like you said, it's their ancestors. So when they do it, even if they're shorter than all of them, they do it with so much passion that it intimidated people like Kobe Bryant, may rest in peace, LeBron James when he was young, Kevin Durant, Jason Kidd. Like, it's because of how much passion and love and culture there was behind it.
Yes, you know,
so much because there are huge dudes. Don't get me wrong,
not
but still, it's, but you see that, you feel it.
I think what it is deeply is that, you know, when you call, we don't call our ancestors. It is not built into our daily DNA.
We don't use the word ancestors.
We don't use in the Arab, like in our Arab universe, which I'm sure there are others, which they do. It's not our practice, right? Mm-hmm. But in my Filipino culture, it is absolutely there. Mm-hmm. So you don't stand in a room as one. You stand with 10,000 behind you. That's how, like, I think Maya Angelou had written that, but it's repeated many, many times.
It's, it's not an original read?
No, it's not. I'm sorry. But it's fun. It's not funny. It's so interesting. What makes me feel so moved, and all of us feel moved. We don't call our ancestors. Mm. You do that as part of your culture. Mm. So when we see it happening, we're moved. Mm. We're moved because we don't know what this feeling is. Yeah. We feel it. Yeah. And and I think
it's very tangible. Sorry.
Yeah,
it's like such a tangible emotional experience. Mm-hmm. And keep it in mind, I'm experiencing this through either my phone or my computer screen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I haven't even experienced it in person yet.
Right. I can't wait to see it.
I cannot wait.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways that leads to my other question, which is, again, I think most of our questions are coming from a place of ignorance, which is amazing. Yo, we're going to take a quick break so Akawi can chill. Reem can update our Shataf report and I'm going to get some water and we shall be right back. We got a little something extra for you. See, we believe that your fitness journey and building better habits ain't got to end with the holy month. So we partner with One Beat to give you the special discount. They're offering all our listeners a 15% discount across all class packages. Simply, all you got to do is visit the website, onebeatdxb.com, select your favorite package, 5, 10, 15, or 20 classes, and put in our promo code DGF with One Beat. DGF for Dukan Gets Fit. With WITH the number one and BEAT on checkout to get to enjoy a 15% discount. Check out the classes, get your health in check, and have a great time, y'all. For more information, check out the episode description and you will find all the details you need under OneBeatDXB. During COVID, right, I remember coming across this video of a school teacher that passed away in New Zealand and the entire school lined up outside. And as their the hearse is coming down with the body, they all the students and teachers in that school were performing the haka. That brought me to tears. Like I was, you know, ugly crying. It was just horrible watching that. But as it's a war dance, is it a different haka in this scenario?
Yes. So we have, as time has progressed, obviously we don't go to war with each other anymore. And so, so we've developed the haka as in, like, say, for example, 2023. We use this dance now to farewell someone.
To farewell them in any way.
In any way.
Like if they get on the air, on a plane.
There's an exchange there to mark a big occasion. Like, so even at weddings, when there is a union of two families coming together, hakas will be performed to, again, showcase this is where we come from, and then we'll see their haka, and that's where they come from. And it's like a union.
Okay.
And in the same way when someone passes, as they're making their final journey into the next life or whatever, we make that what you saw as a farewell. So it can be very, very, very moving and very emotional.
Incredibly emotional.
I think it's very moving because it's very raw.
Yeah.
I have personally never experienced a haka at a farewell. But just seeing online family members paying tribute and saying their final goodbyes to their loved members is very moving. It's raw emotion. And I think that's what the essence of these dances do, is it moves people when they see this language that they're not fluent in, but they have some form of connection to it. It's that humanity, there's that human essence where we can connect to each other through emotion. And this dialect of, you know, I get that. I don't understand literally what the translation is, but I get it.
You understand the emotional sentiment. It speaks to you, even though you have no idea what's being said.
Yeah.
And so, how does it get taught? Does it get taught in homes or in schools? Like, do you learn a haka? Like, obviously you're seeing it as you grow up, but is it your mom's responsibility to teach you or your dad's?
So, over the years, so for example, the way that it's traditionally done is you grow up immersed in this culture. So, it's almost like your language. Like, you just, it's second nature to you. But unfortunately, through colonization, it was actually illegal in New Zealand to actually speak the native language for many years.
Wow.
And so a lot of the culture was actually lost. And what's happening now, which is great, there's a massive push to reconnect with our heritage and our culture. Unfortunately for me, my dad grew up in the era where it was illegal to speak the language or illegal to be Māori or Polynesian. In a sense of speaking the language. I mean, like, language is how we connect with each other,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so if you remove the language, you remove a person's ability to connect and continue the lineage of the past forward. Yeah. So I grew up with parents that were very disconnected from the culture.
Right.
But it's fueled a hunger for me personally to reconnect. And I see that now happening with a lot of my generation, is that we see the gap that was created through colonization. And we're like, yo, we see that space and we want to reconnect.
Yeah.
We want to ensure. And this is the beauty of our culture, is while we recognize and pay tribute to the past, we're very aware of the future.
Yeah.
Mm. And so the next generations that are coming through, aware of the mindset, okay, so what are we passing on now?
Yes.
What are we leaving on in terms of a legacy? And I think our generation working together to reconnect, heal, forgive, and then pass on to the next generation what was always ours to pass on.
That's awesome.
That's wonderful.
And
that's wonderful.
So, question, we also sometimes see the tattoos that are associated with it. Those are tribal Uh-huh. Is that what it is?
But so I think also the way the tattoos are made are tribal, because it's dotted, no? Or it's is like that, a, am I right?
So it's another form of language for us.
Okay.
So
are those the ones you meant?
Yeah. Like we see them a lot. Yeah,
traditional tattoos actually are another way of telling a story. Mm-hmm. And it's another personalized story. So when you get one, it again tells the story of how you came to be. It points out your lineage of who came before you, your origins, your land, your mana being, how do you translate mana? Like the sacredness.
Essence of
your family, those who are behind you. And it also connects you to other tribes.
Yeah.
Or it tells the story of where you're connected. Mm-hmm. So traditionally, that's what the tattoo is. And it can be very personal, depending on which village or which tribe you belong to.
Yeah.
Okay. We see now today a lot of people wearing the designs, a generic design. But for me, I'm of the mindset that that's our art. Mm. And it doesn't matter who the canvas is that's wearing the art. For me, I see it as that's our art being showcased
to the world. That's pretty cool.
But what about the way it's… sorry, Yoti.
Oh, I was just going to say, it resonates with me because in Sudan, traditionally, that's something we have. In certain cultures, we have scarring that happens on the face for different tribes. So different cuts your face represent different tribes in Sudan. And in some cases, forms of tattoos. So for example, there are tattoos on the chin. Or even some women after marriage in certain parts would have just blackout tattoo on their lower lip only. So we had different formats and different expressions of either, the markings or the tattoos to kind of let you know who or where they come from, and that kind of sets part of the identity.
It's interesting as you tell that, that's exactly how it is. What I'm finding that the more I explore this region of the world is how many similarities that we have between our cultures. Because in the Māori culture, it's the same. We have tattoos on our faces and we call it moko. And ladies, they do their lips as well once they're married. There's so many different ways that we use the tattoo to tell the story of who we are and what stage we're in life. Like in Samoan culture, when you grow through, once you pass through adolescence and you go into manhood, a sign of manhood would be to have the be'a, which is a tattoo that covers from your waist down to your knees.
So your torso.
And it's a ritual that marks your transition from
into puberty.
Out of puberty, into manhood.
So
if you saw a man wearing one, you'd know this is now a man. He's no longer a boy or an adolescent.
And the tattoo would be his own journey or something like that. Yes. Or is there
it's a massive ritual. It's such a sacred thing that you do it in pairs. You'd never do it.
Oh wow.
By yourself, you would have to find either your brother or a cousin or some relative that you would do it with them. Mm. And women do it as well.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't think I could do justice to explain the entire… But there's so many different ways to express our culture that we use for either tattoo, dance, language, food. Yeah.
And what's the story you guys are telling on the 29th?
On the 29th, it's mainly to celebrate… Like I said, because of that era in our lives where we became disconnected from our culture, we're trying to use this time now to start celebrating the essence of our culture. So on the 29th, it's basically just a gathering to kind of not necessarily tell a specific story, but to just tell a story of this is who we are.
Mm. Yeah.
We are here and this is who we are. And I find it really fascinating when we mix with the cultures of this region, just how similar and how it's almost like looking into a mirror.
Yeah.
Mm. When you see the similarities, slightly different dialects, different ways of expressing it, different protocols that we follow. But again, it's that human language that we all are aware of and kind of understand.
Absolutely.
So give us the gist. What time, where, how do people sign up? Where do they get tickets? What do they do?
So I'll forward you guys the link. There's a link that we have and it will lead you to a website. It's on the 29th, 6 p.m. And you can purchase your tickets there. There's different pricing depending on what you want to purchase in terms of your food packages.
What's the food?
The food?
What's the food? What cuisine?
We are negotiating to have a lot of Polynesian food
please
there,
do
as much as we can.
Please do.
What we're finding is that so Lapita is a Polynesian hotel, themed hotel out in Dubai Parks and Resorts, and so we're just working with them to try and bring as much.
And it's from Polynesian. Six
until you're ready to go home. 1 a.m.
Oh wow!
Sweet. Okay.
So party all night long.
Yeah,
with the Polynesians.
Yeah. I'm with it, man.
And I'm just so grateful that so one of the things that we always believe in our show, it's like part of our brand DNA, is to make space. To just say your piece and make space, to own the voice that is yours. And I think having spoken to you now more than ever, I'm so proud of I'm proud of Jade, of Emil, of our friends who are like really connecting to deeply to who you are. And now I know you and I'm so happy you're doing this work because this is the work that matters. This is the work. And so thank you for doing
that. Thank you so much for allowing me to come and share this bar or space with you. It's part of my story that I want, or the legacy that I want to leave behind, is creating space. So the word is va, and then it extends to avanor, which is creating space.
What's avanor. That second word?
Avanor.
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 So A-V-A?
A-V-A-N-O-A.
Avanor.
Avanor. So Avanor is creating the space, creating this space.
So you have a word for creating space for people.
Yeah, opportunity.
Well, how wonderful.
That is amazing.
How wonderful. Mm.
Thank you for this Avanor.
Thank you.
That was a strong way to wrap it up.
Yeah.
No. So no shot off.
What
about?
That would ruin this. I think this is exactly where it needs to be.
You don't have a shot off.
I do. But I'll save it for next time.
No. We're going to do a shot off.
Okay.
No. Tell me what a shot off.
Okay, here we go. This is our culture.
This is our Avanor.
Please do.
This is our Avanor.
This is our Avanor.
I'm intrigued.
So
teach me.
I'll tell you how we got to a shot off report. Now, Tak, you don't need to put this just in the whole show, but it's fine. All right. So years ago, we usually traveled together. All right. And then one day we wanted to go to Sri Lanka. And I told them, listen, I've never been, I'm down, but I have one prerequisite is that I need a shattaf. What is a shattaf, you might say? It's
the water hose.
It's the water hose
and toilets.
Clean your tissue.
All
right. And I told them, wherever we go, I'll go wherever you want. But wherever we sleep in needs to have a shattaf. Which made the guys at the time really look into where there's a shattaf. And we found this beautiful villa. And we realized that when there's a shattaf, the experience is 10 times.
Amazing.
All right. And then we started talking about shatafs, and I don't know, on the show, and people were like, and then we mentioned somewhere where we went and found a great shataf. People were like, can you guys do like a tourist thing or like about the best shatafs in the world or in Dubai? Hence the shataf report, where Reem does her community service because she uses any bathroom in the world.
I do God's
And she
work.
Comes back and she rates and tells us where the best shataf is in Dubai, which made us create OT. Reem Hamid goes to different bathrooms and rates them based on one, the bathroom ambiance, the shataf, is it metal, is it silver, is it gold, the temperature of the water, the pressure of the water, and is the tissue 2-ply, 3-ply, and the distance between where you are sitting and how to get to the bathroom.
Your va.
Your va between your bowels and the shataf. Reem Hamid, take us through this shataf report. Go.
Okay. You're in Golden Diamond Park. You're a tourist, okay? You're not. You're in the Gold Souk. The Gold Souk. You're near Bastakia. This is the cultural center of Dubai. All right.
You use the bathroom in the Gold Souk?
Listen, this is what she does for you, only for you people. This is what I'm trying to say. So I'm sure I'm not the only one who's needed to go to the ladies' room while you're taking your friends around the city,
or while you're buying gold.
Oh, why you're buying gold? Because the price is fluctuating dramatically.
Yeah. Shout out to Trinidad.
Right? Anyways, there are pods. I don't know if you know them. There are four pods in the middle of the gold soup. Oh, I can't wait to know. If you had to go to the bathroom, there's actually no other bathroom aside from a restaurant that's all the way at the end and you've got to go all the way up. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's no other bathroom aside from these four pods.
There are pods in the middle of the soup.
There are pods. And you know why you don't notice them? Because everyone's leaning on them. You don't notice them. They have a metal door, a metal sliding door. You need exactly 4 dirhams to put it in. 4 circle coins.
Coins. When's the last time you carried a coin, bruh?
To put them in. So what did I do? I found coins. I pulled money out to exchange it to get 4 coins. 4 coins. I put them in. I put them in, okay? I sanitized my hands. The door goes like... and you look.
It's an automatic door?
It does. No, I mean,
it's the dramatic effect.
Right? The metal door goes, and it's a tiny little bathroom that's relatively clean, considering you're in the gold soup. The
Is it gold-plated?
No, it's not.
Damn it.
They missed that one. Okay, so the shataf is there. I actually enjoyed the experience. Here we go. Ready?
Ratings.
Here we go. Okay. The shataf report is based on four criteria. Number one, the structure of the shataf, does it exist? Okay. Number two, the water pressure. If if there is no pressure, you are not clean.
No, ma'am.
We know this.
No, ma'am.
We know this. Number three, the ambiance of the
space. No, the temperature.
The temperature. The temperature. Yeah. I like a body temperature. Some people like it hot. Some people, we don't know. But anyways. And then finally, the ambiance.
No, the toilet paper.
Yes, toilet paper. The ambiance was a bonus. If there's two or three ply.
Ambiance is a bonus now.
So here we go, guys. Number one, the construction of the shataf. Plastic, okay? Sure. It's the plastic shataf.
Yeah, don't say.
I paid four dirhams for this plastic shataf, and at least, and the silver is coming off it. So now you know it's like that. Yeah.
Sadda. Trust it. Okay.
Next, the water pressure, fantastic.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
you
are clean. Don't you worry.
Okay, that's good. That's promising.
That's promising, right?
We guarantee cleanliness.
Next, what was the next one?
Temperature.
Cold. I don't know why it was so cold at the gold.
Okay.
It was cold. But my expectations were low walking in, I have to admit. So now I was surprised it was there.
Tissue.
To be honest. Tissue, one ply. No. Basically.
There's one ply?
Yeah, it was one ply. You know what
one
it is?
Ply
it was recycled
like,
one ply.
You mean there was
it was recycled one ply. You could see through it. You could see through
it. So in translation, this is only use if you must.
If you must. And it turns out not many people must.
I enjoyed the experience.
I enjoyed the experience because I walked in with zero expectations and I moved it up to a one. I appreciate
so
that.
So you got a one?
Why did I get a one?
Because
I didn't imagine that this toilet would be actually there. Like, I didn't imagine it would actually exist. I didn't imagine the shataf would be there. The floor was dry. I expected the floor to be like a slippy slide. No. So for this shataf report, I give it a rock solid one. If you are in the gold souk, you're a tourist, you come to town and you need to go to the bathroom, don't run to that random restaurant.
Tony just planned. Because you know that gold souk means family visiting from out of town. I got to take him somewhere. Now Tony knows where he's going to go.
Four dirhams in your pocket. Keep those coins because you're going to need them. There's no other way to access this. There's no key. There is no key.
Reem Hamid, I don't think I say this frequently, but God bless you for your community service towards Shataf Report.
Honestly, that's their charity work.
And that's it.
Tony, we thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for sharing your culture.
Thank you, man.
And we can't wait for the 29th of April.
Thank you.
Thank you for kicking it with us today. I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode as much as we enjoyed creating it for you. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast at to stay up to date with all our conversations. Also, if you don't mind, hit us with the 5-star rating, leave a comment, let us know how you feel about the show. That way, it could also help others find the show. And be sure to share it with your friends and family, whoever you think can benefit from it. You can holler at us on all social media platforms at The Can Show. We'd love to hear from you. Or you could drop us an email to hello@thecanmedia.com. Salam.